And once again, it is time for another edition of Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 91.3 FM in Olympia, Washington, 87.9 FM in Point Arena, California on Mojo Radio, and 87.9 FM on Post World Radio in Seattle, Washington, and www.freakradio.org. My name's the V-Man, and today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll re-examine history and go back 30 years in time to the coup overthrow of the democratically elected leader of Chile, Salvador Allende. My guest is Hector Salgado. He'll be joining me by telephone in just a moment. Stand by, stay tuned. Rockin' the Boat coming up next. September 11th will forever hold significance in the minds of most Americans, but for the citizens of Chile, the date holds a particular and much more painful importance. It was 30 years ago on September 11th, 1973, that a U.S.-backed military coup overthrew the democratically elected government of Salvador Allende and installed a tin-pot dictator named Augusto Pinochet. In the 17 years that Pinochet held power, tens of thousands of Chileans were killed, jailed, tortured, or driven into exile. Today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll talk about the forgotten history of the coup and the tragic events that have taken place since. My guest is Hector Salgado, a 16-year-old high school student in 1973. Hector Salgado was abducted a few days after the coup by Pinochet's secret police force, known as the DINA, or Directorate of National Intelligence. He spent 3 years imprisoned in the concentration camp of Isla Quiriquina in the south of Chile, and was eventually exiled to the United States. Today, he is a teacher and a musician who lives in the Bay Area and is currently working on a documentary and a book about his experiences as a political prisoner. He joins us by telephone from his home in the Bay Area. Welcome to Rockin' the Boat, Hector Salgado.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate your taking time to be with us today on this very important date in history. Maybe we can begin by having you describe in some detail maybe the political reality in Chile prior to the coup of September 11th, 1973. Tell us what life was like there under Allende.
Well, under Allende, I was a high school student. I was involved in student activities. I, of course, supported the Allende's government. They were, I think that we were really happy to have Allende in power. He was doing a lot of social changes and economic changes, political changes. But on the other hand, we were also suffering from the United States boycott of the Allende government.
Tell us a bit about the boycott.
Well, this, as everybody knows now, the CIA was sending money to right-wing paramilitary groups in Chile to overthrow the government. They were financing strikes against the government, and they were also financing with arms and money right-wing hit teams. Mm-hmm. One of them was able to kill General Schneider, and who was a general of the Chilean army and also somebody who respected the constitution.
Allende had begun to sort of nationalize the Chilean copper fields and or copper mines, rather. Do you think that this played a role in the U.S. decision to remove Allende, or was there more to it than that?
Yeah, in a little bit. But I think that the U.S. had a policy of attacking any country who had an independent political voice from what the U.S. wanted to have in Latin America. We all know that during those years in the 70s, there was a very strong competition between the socialist world and the United States world. And Chile was caught right in the middle of that fight.
Tell us about the Pinochet regime. When he first came to power after the coup, Which elements of Chilean society were targeted for kidnap or torture and imprisonment or outright murder? Like, who was he going after?
Pretty much everybody.
Everybody, huh?
Yeah. I mean, in the armed forces, many soldiers from Navy, Air Force, the Army, all of who were against the coup were either killed or put in prison. And then women's organizations were persecuted, students' organizations, workings, intellectuals, either businessmen who were in favor of the Allende's government, because Chile was not a typical communist economic society. It was a free market economy. And so the persecution of the Pinochet regime was overall around everybody, basically.
I'm speaking with Hector Salgado. You spent 3 years imprisoned under Pinochet. Tell us what that experience was like. Why do you believe that you were kidnapped and targeted for imprisonment? And then tell us what that was like.
Well, like I said before, I was a student, and I was organized, like many Chilean students at that time. We were, asking for better education, for more financial aid, and we were also organized to help other groups of Chilean society, like, workers and women's rights. And so when I was detained in October 7, 1973, I was basically kind of disappeared since October until the end of December of 1973. There I was transferred to different concentration camps, but I spent most of my time in Isla Quiriquina, which is a Navy base in the south of Chile. After that, I was put in another concentration camp in Concepcion, and I spent the rest of my three-year sentence there. Later on, I was exiled at the end of 1976. The only places that were taking Chilean exiles at that time was, the United States and Europe. Mm-hmm. But at that time that I was trying to get out, the U.S. was the place. And since I had people who were coming here already, I had friends, I decided to come here. And now I've been here for more than 30 years, actually. The life in prison was very hard, as you might imagine. We were not being tortured in prison, living conditions were very, very bad. Health-wise, we were very weak. And those were hard times for us.
You mentioned that for the first few months you mentioned that you were disappeared. Now, maybe can you just describe for our listeners what that was like? I mean, you don't get like a court trial. You're not like brought in front of a judge or anything. I mean, this is just summary detention, correct?
Exactly. Yes. What I mean by that is that your family doesn't know where you are.
Right.
And nobody knows where you are except the military. So between my detention day, which was October 7, 1973, until the end of December, there was no record of me in anywhere. In other words, every time my family asked for me at the police station or at the army base, they always denied my existence. So my family didn't know if I was alive or dead, or they didn't know where I was, basically. People had ideas that we were detained in the island, but they didn't know for sure. And during those months, we were being interrogated and tortured, basically, every day. that's why we were not being. That's why we were disappeared, because they had time to abuse and to interrogate, and even later after December, when they put us in a more like public place, we didn't have a right to have a lawyer or anything like that.
What kind of torture methods were used? What do you know?
Well, the first couple of months, the dictatorship and the secret police were kind of learning how to get information from political prisoners. So even though they had the classical electricity and punching the body with wet towels, so they didn't have mark in your mm-hmm. body, there were also very, very brutal beatings by a group of, 5-10 military people. In other words, they will put you in the interrogation room in the middle, and then they will beat you up with hands, legs, with the feet, and anywhere. So with the time they started to do more systematic interrogation and torture. So at the beginning it wasn't one type of torture, but more like random kind of abuse. I remember that the first couple of days when I was being interrogated, they cut my hair with what is called yatagan, which is the knife that they put in front of the shotguns.
Like a bayonet.
Bayonet, exactly. Mm-hmm. They cut my hair, then they put the hair on the floor, and they asked me to eat my own hair. They, in addition of being physical torture, they also humiliated, and they were always trying to humiliate us by doing things like drinking your own pee, or eating the hair, or crawling on the floor, or trying to hit somebody, another person, another fellow political prisoner, those kind of things.
And as we know, the documents have been released over the intervening years that the United States, particularly Henry Kissinger, at the time Secretary of State, was the one who orchestrated all of this, and sent money to train the Pinochet, our army, the Pinochet backers in the army. Kissinger was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1973. How does that make you feel?
Terrible. It's terrible that somebody like Kissinger here in the United States is regarded as a political personality, and he has so much power and influence.
Yeah.
But that guy is a criminal. I mean, he knew exactly what Pinochet was doing in Chile. He knew that people were being killed and tortured and put in prison, and he looked the other way. There's no excuse for that. I mean, one human being, or 100, or 10,000, or a million, or 6 million, whatever amount of people is being killed, is an abuse in the human rights of those people. And he knew that, but he looked the other way. So in my eyes, and in the eyes of many Chileans and many people around the world, he's a criminal.
Mm-hmm. Again, I'm speaking tonight with Hector Salgado. He survived the Pinochet regime and is now living in the Bay Area. And he's working on a book about his experiences being a political prisoner in Chile. Tonight is the eve of the 30-year anniversary of the coup of the democratically elected leader there, Salvador Allende. And we're discussing some of that history. Tell us, over the years, Pinochet set up an international terrorist network called Operation Condor. Maybe you can give our listeners a little bit of information about what Operation Condor was all about.
Well, Operation Condor, with the help of the CIA and with the help of Henry Kissinger when he was Secretary of State, the dictatorship secret police, DINA, as well as the secret police of governments from Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Brazil, got together and they coordinated their repression. So somebody, and a Chilean who was caught in Buenos Aires or in Paraguay, was transferred to Chile, or if an Argentinian was caught in Chile, hiding from the repressive government of Argentina, that prisoner was transferred to Argentina. And usually what happened is that most of those people were killed. That was one thing. And the other thing is that the secret police of Chile was also killing opposition figures, Chileans, abroad. And we know now that the secret police tried to kill a couple of Chilean leaders in Italy, in Rome, and they were successful in killing Orlando Letelier in Washington, D.C. in 1976, which, in my opinion, was the first terrorist act in U.S. soil. A couple of blocks, not far from the White House, there was a car bomb where Letelier was killed, and Ronnie Moffitt was also killed. It was Letelier's secretary. She was an American. And even though this act of terrorism was financed by the Chilean government, done by Chileans and an American, Michael Townley, who was a CIA man, the U.S. government looked the other way. And this was right here in the United States. So there is a lot of cynicism when the U.S. talks about terrorist act here in the United States, when in reality terrorist acts have been taking place for many, many years, and the U.S. have been looking the other way.
Mm-hmm. I can't help but make the parallel with when you were describing earlier about the conditions that you were held in the Chilean prisons. It sounds eerily similar to what I've been hearing in the wake of September 11th, 2001, and the way that a lot of Muslims and Arab Americans have been treated by U.S. authorities. But I'd like to talk more about what happened with Pinochet. As you know, in 1998, in October 98, he was arrested by London police who were acting on a warrant issued by Spanish authorities. And eventually, his prosecution was halted and the case was thrown out because of his ailing health. How does that make you feel? I mean, do you think that any good came out of that arrest? And even though it doesn't seem like he's ever going to be brought to justice and will die an old man, will be able to live out his life, you know, in relative freedom, what message does that send to other dictators about the possibility of facing justice for their crimes?
Well, at the very beginning, when he was detained in London, I was very excited. Actually, the reason why I started doing this documentary with the director and continue with the idea of writing my book, which had been in the back of my mind for many, many years, and it's more like a personal diary. But when I heard that Pinochet had been taken in house arrest, it gave me hope that things were able to... that maybe we could do things to find justice and truth for Chile and the many crimes. So, but later with the time, we realized that Pinochet was brought back to Chile thanks to a negotiation between the Chilean government, which at that time was in conjunction with the armed forces, and the British government, Tony Blair and Jack Straw. They were trying to get Pinochet out of the hook, and that's what they did. And they did some tests that said that Pinochet was had dementia. He wasn't. He was old and weak, and he had some mental problems, which in reality everybody knows. Pinochet knows. Everybody knows in Chile that he doesn't have any problem, any mental problems, that it was done just to get him out of the Spanish court, out of the possibility of being put in jail. So that's, you know, one thing that is it really upset me, because I really wanted to have I would have loved to have Pinochet in front of a judge and answering questions, even though the law in Chile at least protect people under Pinochet's age. But I would have loved to have him in front of a judge and answer questions. But on the other hand, what they did in England is better than nothing. And so it was something.
Ultimately, when all is said and done, who do you believe should be held responsible aside from, we talked a bit about Kissinger, we just talked about Pinochet, but the individuals that are involved in this, the individual military officers and higher-ups through the regime, you know, they got their training from the U.S., probably from the School of the Americas in Georgia. I mean, who in your mind should be held responsible ultimately? Is it the leaders or is it the individuals?
Well, there is a big responsibility in Chile in terms of the armed forces. In terms of the, I mean, Pinochet is one person who is director to, he's responsible. And also the U.S. government, mm-hmm. who let this thing happen in Latin America, and specifically in Chile. There was a policy and financed by U.S. taxpayers' money to overthrow Salvador Allende. And with that coup d'etat came all this dark history for Chile that after 30 years we're still talking about it, mm-hmm. because we haven't been able to find justice and the truth about what took place in Chile. And many of the criminals, of people who tortured me, who abused me, and many other Chileans are still either free and retired from the armed forces or they're active. In my documentary, I was able to interview three ex-military people who were involved in my case, and all of them are not sorry for what they did. And there are retired who get all the benefits from the Chilean government and the Navy, and some of them, two of them that were involved in my case, are still active in the Navy. Wow. With positions of power, and they haven't answered any questions. So my thing now is to come out with this documentary and my book and to show the Chilean people and also the American people, because I'm doing this for the American audience too, to show that there are people like me and many others who are trying anything they can to brought these criminals to justice. Mm-hmm. In that documentary also, I think that we have to make clear to the American people that the U.S. government at that time, Henry Kissinger with Richard Nixon, were very much involved in everything that took place there.
And unfortunately, it seems to be under the Bush administration. We're hearing about other Chiles around the world, and these kinds of things continue on in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and all over the world.
Yeah, I will tell you and your audience to be really careful with your human rights, because what Bush is doing is pretty much what Pinochet did. I mean, not the same, but that organization that he created with I don't know what's the name of the
Homeland Security.
Homeland Security. That's the beginning of everything. You know, they're using excuses to curtail, you know, the rights of the American people. And like what you were saying before, what those people in Guantanamo, regarding if they're guilty or not guilty of what of anything, they have rights. And if they look around, and if the American people let them use that criteria that they're all terrorists, therefore they don't have any rights, next time they're going to come to Ohio and get, you know, 20 people there, and they're going to take them in. And they're not going to have any rights for them either. And so, you know, the Constitution and the law has to be the same for everybody until they're proven either innocent or guilty. So I will say, be careful, because things might get out of hand.
Mm-hmm. We just have a few moments left, and I'm speaking again with Hector Salgado. He is a survivor of the Pinochet regime. In the wake of the Pinochet arrest, you were able to return to your hometown and sort of revisit your past. Tell me about this experience and give us a sense of what is happening in Chile now.
Well, Pinochet had to, in 1991, he had to, because the pressure, the international pressure and the pressure in Chile was so strong that he had to leave power, basically. And then there were elections in 1991, and a democratic government was installed in Chile. And then another one in 1994, and then another one in 2000. So we have already three elected presidents in Chile since Pinochet was kicked out of the power. But even though Pinochet is not in power, like I was saying before, the armed forces, the right-wing political parties, and the judicial system, and some members even of the church, are still protecting Pinochet, and they are trying to forget about what took place in Chile, and they are basically creating a whole generation of Chileans who don't want to remember what happened. So it's very sad to go back to Chile and find out that there was a poll last week, 67.5% of Chileans don't want to remember the coup, September 11, 1973. And that's very sad, because when you don't remember what happened, you tend to commit the same mistakes. And if people forget about what took place in Chile in 1973, who knows, maybe 5 years, 10 years from now, you know, we're going to make the same mistake. So it's important to remember, it's important to do this kind of program that you're doing, it's important to do the thing that I'm doing, like my book, the documentary. It's important to write poetry and songs. And we need to make sure that this kind of stuff doesn't take place again.
Mm-hmm. I've been speaking tonight with Hector Salgado, a survivor of Pinochet's regime. You're working on a documentary and also a book. When are these due to be out?
Hopefully next year, maybe July, August. Mm-hmm. But if people want to help me, because these are very expensive things, and they can contact the film, San Francisco Film Foundation. There is information about what we're doing. The documentary is called Special Circumstances, and we have a great amount of people working in this, and we hope to finish next year. We would love to have it done by this September, but more than having seen some time for this anniversary, we're really careful about what we want to do with this at the end. So we want to take all the time that we need to finish this in a way that is, you know, that is a good story, and that it makes sense for Americans and also for Chileans. So next year.
Well, we look forward to that, and hopefully you'll bring it to Santa Cruz so some of our audience members can go see it.
We'll go all over.
Great. I appreciate your time tonight. Hector Salgado has been joining me on Rockin' the Boat. That's going to wrap it up for us this evening. And I'll be back again tomorrow from 5:30 to 6 o'clock. And tonight we're going to go out with a little music from a murdered Chilean musician, Victor Jara. Stay tuned to 96.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz.
El derecho de vivir, poeta Ho Chi Minh, que golpea de Vietnam a toda la humanidad. Ningún cañón borrará el surco de tu arrozal. El derecho de vivir en paz. Indochina es el lugar más allá del ancho mar,